Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of October 21st, 2019. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by Kaplan Financial Education and by your state society of CPAs. This week, we're going to look at a few things that have happened. We've had some draft forms come out from the IRS and draft instructions, and it gives us some additional guidance about what the IRS is thinking on some areas. So we'll take a look at that. We'll talk about some relief that the agents have been directed to give to taxpayers who are applying for Work Opportunity Tax Credit. We'll talk about the new Social Security wage-based numbers that were released officially. We've had a lot of people compute them up to now, but now we have the official announcements. And also how the IRS told the Taxpayers Advocate's Office that they do not think it's a good idea for them to delay notifying the State Department for individuals with high amounts of tax debt unpaid just because those people file with the Taxpayer Advocate's Office. They have now turned that down and will begin starting making such referrals after temporarily suspending it while considering the request. So, interesting week. We'll take a look. I just got back. You want to know why we took a little bit longer to get up if you get watch it on the weekend. It's because I was coming back yesterday from up in the New England area, and I'm actually going to go back up into the Northeast later this week, doing a couple of infirm sessions. But I want to remind you, we did have last week our first online Cal CPA session that was a partnership course. I will be doing another session coming November the 26th. Another one of those should be available with many of your state societies. You can register through the state society. It will be the course on Section 199A Explained, Planning for Qualified Business Income. It will run at 6 a.m. Pacific Time and 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Actually, it probably should be Pacific Standard Time by then, not Pacific Daylight. That mainly is going to make a difference to people here in Arizona, because that means once they go from daylight to standard, we move an hour, we swap by an hour off that. So we have to worry about it. But basically 6 a.m. And 8 a.m. in California. That, of course, means if you're on the East Coast, it would be 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., and you would adjust otherwise. If you're in the Central Time Zone, it's going to be 7 a.m. It's going to be basically your 8 a.m. and then 10 a.m. starts, all those things. And if you're in the Mountain Time Zone, then we're looking at the 7 a.m. and the 9 a.m. starts. So, you know, how that works over that time. But that'll be the 199 Cap A discussion, and that's going to be the week of Thanksgiving. So, and yeah, you know, it's not that far off at this point. You're just looking about just about a month, and it's Thanksgiving. Imagine that. Well, tax season, you know, we finished up the regular tax season. Yeah, it's about time to get to the end of the year. So check your state society website for registration information. That'll be available from the Cal CPA's rebroadcast of a Section 199 Cap A discussion. Well, let's go ahead and look at our first issue that we're going to discuss this week. And this is a large business and industry and small business self-employed division, a joint directive on the Work Opportunity Credit under the Internal Revenue Code Section 51. This is LBNI 04-1019-011. It was actually issued on October the 10th, posted to their website this week. Now, if you remember the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, it's a credit that you have to get a certification from the state employment agency stating that you have a qualified employee. And once you get that, then you send that in along with your tax return, and you're able to claim the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. What's been happening is that there's been some extreme delays in issuing these certifications by various agencies. And these delays have resulted in situations where taxpayers could not get the certifications by the due date, including extensions of the time to file the return for the year in which they paid the wages. Now, the way the law reads, you're supposed to claim it the year you paid the wages, but you can't claim if there's no certification. So then we get into this mess of having to either amend the prior return, or what some taxpayers did was said, we'll skip that. You know, we're always getting these over a year late. We'll just claim it on the next return. That's not technically correct, but the IRS has now decided in their term, and I think the term they use, as I recall, is they say for administrative convenience, it should be, to use resources effectively and reduce administrative burdens, examiners shall not challenge the timing when a client claims the Work Opportunity Credit if the credit claims, you know, complies all the requirements, but claim the year they received the delayed certification. So in essence, even though they're doing it, and by the way, this is kind of funny because I have to assume a whole lot of companies were doing it. Because normally you're not allowed to choose your year. And normally this isn't something that they would give in on. But in this case, I think they've decided it was so extreme in any event. It's the way it works. Now, in essence, you do have to be a little bit consistently. And there's some discussion there about allowing a transition year to convert from its previous computation methodology to claiming it in the certification year. So they are going to require that you actually, certify that this tax, or basically be consistent. You can't decide to do some tax. Some of them you're going to do in the year in which you pay it, and then other years you'll say, I'm going to wait and do it next year when I get the certification. They're going to say, no, you got to be consistent here. We're not going to let you just pick and choose what you're going to do. But within that context, we still get the right to use it. So the IRS agents have been directed not to challenge that year, except to look to help clients get to a consistency route. So they're consistently claiming it in the same year. Now, I've told you about draft forms and instructions. Let's start with our first issue. The first draft thing we're going to look at here will be the draft instructions for the 2019 Form 1120S and K-1. These were issued the day after the 15th of October. So it came in on October 16th, came down and actually came in that evening of October the 16th, and was noticed by Glenn Birnbaum, who posted on Twitter on the 17th, that he noticed it come up overnight. So what exactly did the IRS do under this new program? Well, they added a new flow chart for Section 199 Cap A related items as put into these instructions. And it's a simplified flow chart versus the big one that's in the form 8995. But it's simplified for the simple reason that it's just going through what has to go out on the K-1. So it's not really replacing 8995's long form instructions of figuring out what you're doing, but it sort of fills in the holes. It does, however, again talk about whether or not you were basically making your payments, or you were, should say, have charitable contributions that are related to your business, and that you just have to reduce QBI by that. So no, they're not backing off that. They've mentioned it again. They do have other checklist issues. The other things, though, beyond that, which is kind of just simply an assistance, they also have three new statements that are going to go on the return. First, we have a statement A, which is the QBI pass-through entity reporting statement. That statement lists every trade or business that you are involved in. And for each one, you've got to say, is it a PTP, public traded partnership? It's coming from there. Is it an aggregated trader business? Or is it a specialized service trader business? And I suppose it could be PTP and SSTB, but it can't be aggregated in SSTB, because remember, specified service trader businesses can't be aggregated. So those two shouldn't be done. Then it has the various things you should report. It has various line items it wants us to see separate. Your lines end for W-2 wages and UBIA, and then a separate line for any Section 199 Cap A dividends, that is if your S corporation is holding some REITs. Statement A is to be attached to everybody's K-1 to allow them to get the information needed for each trader business of the S corporation. If the S corporation is doing any aggregation, then they have to file Statement B. Statement B is going to ask you for information on the aggregation of the businesses together, whether anyone's were acquired or disposed of and all those issues. That information will also go out with the K-1. And then third, if the S corporation is a patron of an agricultural cooperative, then there is a whole nother attachment to go in related to the cooperatives and how your income from that, for that 199 Cap AG special subtraction that you get with cooperatives. So that's all new. These are all attachments that are going to go with your K-1 this year. So we have some more information about what we'll see on the returns and what's going to be done new in your tax software. And why is all this coming out now? Why didn't we have it last year? Simply a matter that the IRS didn't have time to get all this together. So we're going to see this in some ways will be the first year of the what we're really going to be doing is reporting for 199 Cap A. That's what we find out by looking at this type of information, is that the IRS now is telling you the sort of things they want you to look at. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll see what the IRS does with this information. Next up, Social Security Administration on the 15th of October officially announced a number of inflation-adjusted numbers for 2015. For 2020. For 2020, the wage base is going to go to $137,700. That's up from $132,900 for this year. The amount of earnings you have to have a quarter of earnings to be credited with a quarter of earnings for qualification for Social Security will go to $1,410, up from $1,360 in the prior year. If you're under your normal retirement age, right, 62 plus or 65 plus whatever how many months, 66 I guess now it should be plus how many months, the maximum amount you can earn will rise to $18,240 or $1,520 per month in the year in which you retire. So that'll be your maximum during your retirement months. In the year in which you actually do reach full retirement age, year of retirement, that number goes to $48,600. Or $4,050 per month in that actual year of retirement, I should say. Full retirement age, year you reach full retirement age, that's how much you can earn essentially before you reach that age. Obviously, normally it's going to be less than $48,600 because normally you're not going to be reaching it in December, but if you are, then yeah, could go as high as $48,600. The maximum benefit somebody can receive in 2020 will be $3,011, and that would be earned presumably if you had the maximum earnings for all of the quarters, and that is all the 40, quote, quarters that you are supposed to be covered. If you maxed out in all of those years, then you should be getting $3,011 if you start to receive your benefits at your normal retirement age in, you know, this year. Obviously, if you go with age 62, that gets reduced. If you wait till age 70, that grows. Yeah, we know how all that works. But they've got the numbers this year and how they're going to work. IRS has actually already, you know, they just barely got the draft Schedule K-1 for 1065 out at the very end of September. You may remember we discussed that here already. They have already revised the draft 1065 K-1. That revised draft came out on October 18th. And so the question becomes, what's different? Well, the major changes you're going to find are in Part 2. And what Part 2 does is make some minor changes. Well, it makes a change under line E of Part 2 and just, you know, goes, instead of saying ID number, says SSN or TIN. People know what that is and what an ID number is. So, you know, they basically have a little bit of text there. More interesting is for F, which is for the address, it says which name should be there. Remember, line E told you not to give the TIN of a disregarded entity. F tells you this should be the name and address of the person or of the entity whose ID number is back there on line E. Now that's kind of interesting because what it suggests is that you should be getting the ID number of the individual deemed to be the owner and not the name of, let's say, the limited liability company that may technically be the member or partner. So they're warning you here that that's what it should be. The other significant change is found on what used to be line H and now has been divided into two lines, H1 and H2. And now you're going to look at, not only do they want to know the name of the discard entity if it's held in discard entity, but they also now want to know the ID number. So you're going to have to give the EIN for the disregarded entity when you are filling in the K-1. Why is the IRS asking for this information? My guess is they may be finding some trouble following through. They know some disregarded entities are filing payroll tax reports. They don't know if they're being used, and I suspect they're a little concerned they're being used as a way to pay salaries to partners. They might want to be interested in that situation. And also, let's be honest, sometimes that EIN has been given to third parties, for information reporting and the like. So there are various reasons why they've decided that EIN may be useful to them. In any event, they want that EIN and they want the name of the discard entity in addition to the Social Security number and the name, or the EIN and the name of the actual person deemed to be the owner when we look through the discard entity. So again, some more changes. If you've been using the disregarded entity's name on the K-1, you should be changing that. And you will need to get the ID number for the disregard entity, and you have to report that this year if you've not worried about that because you've just been reporting the Social Security number of the person. Then, yeah, you got to dig a little further and get a taxpayer ID number, assuming, of course, anybody's applied for one. You know, the theory is if we didn't have a bank account, we may never have actually applied for one. So it'll be interesting to see what the instructions tell us. Unlike the 1120S instructions that we got this week, we don't yet have any instructions on this part of it. So we don't yet know what's going to happen in this regard as to, you know, what are they going to do about this particular thing, about the EIN and the disregard entity? You know, are we going to, you know, if it doesn't have one, do we just say none available? Is that going to be an okay line? We'll have to see. You know, it's possible, I guess, that the IRS may decide that you'll just have to go with an SS4 and get an ID number to send in with that for the disregarded entity. And I would assume that's also going to cover if you have a grantor trust situation, like a standard revocable living trust. And that could be really interesting because quite often those have never gotten an ID number. And if we need to get one for them, that gets a little more interesting. So I'd keep my eyes on this. But as I say, for now, you know, we don't know for sure, you know, why exactly they're doing this. Finally, this week, the IRS was taking under consideration a request by the Taxpayer Advocate Office to essentially delay the time when they will send a report to the State Department about somebody who is a seriously delinquent taxpayer. Now remember, the seriously delinquent taxpayer rule was added under the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act in December 2015. And it requires the IRS to send a notification to the State Department if you are a seriously delinquent taxpayer. That is, you have over $50,000 in debt. It's inflation adjusted, so it's a bit higher now. You also have, you know, you have a lien. You have some other action against you. There are various things you've gone through. You've exhausted your appeals. You've exhausted your rights for the due process, collection due process rules. So basically, we've gone through everything. It's due and payable. But TAS said, Taxpayer Advocate's Office, I'll get that out, said that, yeah, but if somebody's coming to us for assistance, well, you know, we have a lot of things to do. And we have a lot of people asking for assistance. So what we would have liked to you to do is, while we are considering whether to take action, we would like you to temporarily put a hold on sending this information to the State Department. When the TAS sent that in, the IRS initially temporarily agreed to this. They went ahead and they took the action. So what the IRS did for a while was they said, yep, we're going to sit on these. So we're considering it. So for right now, we'll sit on them for now. And then we'll later get back to you. And by the way, I should say, the seriously delinquent number for this year, just found that is $52,000. So that's the key. And they've had all of these issues. Now the IRS has decided. They've thought about what the taxpayer advocate asked them to do, and now they've decided that, no, we think this could be a problem. What the IRS says is, and this comes from their release on it on their website, excluding cases from certification solely on the basis that the taxpayer is seeking assistance from TAS could allow a, and they put this in quote, won't pay taxpayer, to circumvent the intent of the legislation to obtain or renew a passport. Remember, IRS notifies the State Department that this person is seriously delinquent debt. That is supposed to cause the State Department to either, you know, to not issue a new passport or renew a current one for the taxpayer. Also, there may be consideration given to suspending their passport. This can be a very serious problem if your client does business internationally, because obviously without a passport, it's a little tough to go to those meetings in Europe, right? You just have a little trouble doing that, or even a meeting in Canada. You know, you can't make it across the border because you don't have a passport. So what the government decided, though, was the IRS's theory, well, here's our problem. Taxpayer is one of those, as they say, won't pay. The theory is the taxpayer's whole game in this, in the view of the IRS, is to assure that nobody ever ever, they never have to pay. So conceptually, what they want to do is, you know, delay as long as possible. And if you've ever been around collection, that's not exactly a completely unjustified fear. There are a number of cases for collection due process cases that go to the tax court, a number of other situations where it seems like the only reason certain actions were taken was to try to slow up the IRS. So the IRS said, because we think that this has too much ability to be abused and that bad faith taxpayers would abuse it by simply flooding TAS with requests for assistance, the IRS is going to decline to slow down the process. You know, they said the IRS has determined that could lead to a problem for these debts. The IRS theory is that the taxpayers have always already gone through the entire collection due process situation. They have an option to negotiate an installment agreement or an offer in compromise with the service. They haven't done any of this. They've gotten tons of notices. They're saying, at this point in time, we have been waiting so long on this tax, and we believe that we have enough procedures in place to essentially protect the taxpayers' rights, that it seems to us that any way we sit back here and just try to delay this, you know, we sit back and wait for TAS to come in, is just inviting somebody who's been doing delay and delaying. Because remember, one of the key ways you deal with collection problems is, to be totally honest, wait out the 10-year statute. So if somebody's waiting out the statute, then that person is going to try to assert, of course, get everything pushed back past 10 years before this referral ever goes to state. So the IRS is saying, now we're not going to do that. Now the bad news is, if you do have somebody that slipped through the system, yeah, going to TAS won't help unless you get TAS to move quickly. The IRS points out they'll still take action based on TAS. So TAS still has the right, you know, to send their taxpayer assistance orders over, and they still have the right to do certain things once they're working the case. But the IRS is not going to wait to let them work the case. I also suspect internally, this may be one of those internal government things where the theory is that if we say it's okay and we won't take any action until they work the case, then that takes all the heat off them, and they're not going to move very quickly to work these cases. So this is going to put a little pressure on TAS. That may be the case, because what may end up happening is, this may make these high priority cases for TAS, since they know that, you know, they can't get a temporary stop. So we'll have to see how all of this runs. Like I said, it's been an interesting week for me. In fact, now next week I end up heading and having to go on the road again. It is that time of year to register for your CPE. Again, remember, state societies, and I've booked enough to know that we've got lots of it going out there. You know, you take a look, see what's up, and try to find something you want to take in the courses. Look at your state society's catalog. What I've got coming up in the week of October 28th, November 1st, the week after this broadcast goes, is I've got, actually that day, it's kind of fun in this business. You know, you do 5 days, you got different topics every day. I'm going 5 days doing 6 topics, which makes it kind of interesting. Don't repeat much. I will start on October the 28th and 29th in Albuquerque at their offices, the New Mexico Society of CPAs, and this is being a live course there. These three courses actually are being taped for rebroadcast and will show up as a Cal CPA webcast later, so they'll also be available there. But if you're in Albuquerque, you can see the live session. We're talking about depreciation, repairs, and fixed assets. That's all those things that work with us. We have fixed assets, depreciation rules. That'll be on the 28th in Albuquerque. On the 29th, I will have 2 4-hour courses in the morning. I will do accounting, auditing, and tax considerations for the cannabis industry. It's kind of interesting new area, and we'll talk about some of the issues there. I found the past, the main interest in this area is going to be in the area of the tax problems of 280E and how we work with that, and you know what options are there, what issues are available. And to be honest, most of what people are trying has failed drastically in this area, but we'll talk about what's happened, what hasn't. We'll talk about some of the banking problems and some of the other issues that we have in that area. We also, in the afternoon, talk about new businesses, advising clients on related tax issues. That's we talk about a client's, we start up a business, what sort of things should we be talking to them about. After that, on the 30th, I actually can make this trip. It's kind of funny. I discovered the airlines can make this work. So I will be on October the 30th coming in for day two of the Pacific Tax Institute in Lynnwood, Washington. That's just north of Seattle. This is for the Washington Society of CPAs. The Pacific Tax Institute runs on the 29th and 30th. It is both being held at the Lynnwood Convention Center in Lynnwood, and it's being webcast at the same time. So if you can't make it there, you can take it on the web. I'll be doing a session on the 30th. This, of course, being a conference, there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of speakers on different topics. My session, though, is going to be on trust, what is accounting income, and other income, other issues for the income taxation of trust. We'll talk about a lot there, the Washington Uniform Principal and Income Act, which is, you know, very similar to most other states, but there always are some differences. And then after that, I head over to Boise, Idaho. And these will be webcast and live in Boise at the Idaho Society offices on Halloween. I do partnership and S corporation, basis and distribution issues. And then to start the month of November, Section 199 Cap A explored, planning for qualified business income. This is a live session of that thing that would be rebroadcast late the next month. You can catch it live webcast, and basically live in person there in Boise, Idaho. So if you want to sign up and look at that, you have some issues about that whole 199 Cap A and now some of the new guidance we've got, the unofficial guidance that's coming out from all these odd places. We're going to talk about all that sort of stuff during that day in Boise. So I invite you to come in for either of those courses. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments here for this week of October the 21st, 2019. You can catch our regular updates at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com on the web. We'll talk about things that happen during the week in taxes. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me, edzollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. You can follow me on Twitter. It's @edzollers there. I also follow discussions on the subreddit /r/taxpros on Reddit. And then for state societies, I follow the discussions on Cal CPA's Tax Talk group, which is a Yahoo group, which, as you may know, if you saw this kind of, it's trivia for the most part, since most people don't use Yahoo groups, but you may have discovered that Yahoo groups is kind of being, shall we say, deprecated by Verizon. So Cal CPA is probably moving this here sometime soon, but for now, it still go to groups.yahoo.com and ask to be let in. And I assume they're working on a project where if you're let in there when they move to a new location, and they are working right now and seem to have a pretty good idea of where they want to move, they'll be able to move you over. But that has a really good discussion for people all around the country. I also follow the discussions on three state societies I'm a member of. I follow the Connect sites for Arizona, Minnesota, and New Jersey. So if you have some questions, you can post something there. And if I think I can be of help, I'll try to chime in on those. You know, see whatever you want to see. You know, we'll take care of that for you there. As I say, it's been an interesting week. We've got the IRS giving us some more instructions. I'll be taking looks at what happens, you know, in the coming week. Now, this week will be more interesting with recording. We'll see how the recording works this week, because, again, not really that much problem this week, because I'm not speaking on Friday in a firm, so I'm not having to travel in on Saturday. But I will have to leave on Sunday to get to New Mexico, and we'll see if I can get to my recordings before I leave on the plane, or if I have to record once I'm in New Mexico. I'm hoping to get them done on Saturday so I don't have to send them off on the week. But that depends a lot on how everything gets written up. So in any event, by Monday I will have something up there. So hopefully we'll see you then. Things are going to keep happening. It's probably going to be a very, surprise-filled time period through the end of the year as the IRS tries to rush to get guidance out here before we have to go into another filing season. So be sure to join us next week for another session of Current Federal Tax Developments.